You are listening to episode 128 of the Africana Woman Podcast, Live Boxless, with Anina Williams. My name is Chulu, your host. Let's go. Hello, beautiful. How are you? I am seated on a deck with my feet up, looking out at the Zambezi River, and there's a cool breeze, and yo, guys, I'm just feeling so full of joy. So I am at Kasaka River Lodge with the Women in Podcasting, which is powered by the Women's History Museum Zambia. But I'll tell you where this all started. So back in December, Spirit instructed me to do a podcast workshop. I was like, okay. So I mentioned it to a friend in January, and I just said, you know what, I really want to do a podcast workshop. I had no idea of exactly what was going to happen. No strategy, no plan, zero, all right? Zero. And a few days later, I received a call inviting me to the possibility of hosting a podcast workshop with the Women's History Museum Zambia. And I was like, all right, it seems this is a done deal, hey? So we selected 12 women from across Zambia with different interests to be part of this immersive experience. Interestingly enough, the first time that I attended the Kasaka Women's Workshop, I attended as a participant for the travel writers. But now I get to return as a facilitator. So right from the beginning, I told the ladies, I do not have all the answers. You're a sham. But I will be a guide and I will facilitate their ideation, creativity, and knowledge pooling. So we have spent 4 days together. We have learned from amazing speakers whom I have to thank. Yay, guys. I'm so grateful. Each of them brought so much depth, context, and nuance to the conversation. So please just bear with me. Thank you so much, Gathoni Ngumba from AfriPods, Cree J from Vibe Communications, Wanjiru Njiru from Joyride Podcast, and Bidemi Adedire from APVA. And a special shout out to Lady Light and Lord MND from the Ethereum Zambia. Even as the facilitator, I took away so much, my goodness. All I'm saying is watch out for the amazing podcasts and collaborations that will come from our 12 participants. And to learn more about each of them and to see what the workshop has been like, go to ZPodHub. At ZPodHub on Instagram. We're also on Twitter. You can check that out as well. But ZPodHub on Instagram, you can see the pictures and a few videos. It's been so beautiful. So go to the stories, go to the posts, and you kind of get an idea of what we've been doing over these last few days. I absolutely love being conscious to a prayer coming true. My heart is full. I am so grateful and I have so much joy. Ugh, incredible. Plus, if you ever want a team building or leadership session, guys, you cannot go wrong with Africana Woman. I'm telling you. It's just, we just have a different flavor of how we do things, how we bring people together. There's a consistent energy that we bring, okay? So you guys, if you ever have a team building If you ever have a team building session and you're thinking, oh, who can we bring in to lead this? Please just reach out to us, okay? So reach out at AfrikanerWoman@gmail.com. So have you ever had a sensory overload? I don't even have time to process it. So, yeah. This week has been amazing. So you can imagine, here I am in the middle of the bush, just having this amazing experience with these amazing people. And then I'm just getting to my messages of just amazingness. So first of all, guys, Afrikaner Woman has been shortlisted as one of the finalists for the prestigious Kayana Female MSME Awards in the category of the Diaspora Excellence Award. Yay! We need your votes. We need your votes. So, let's show them who the Afrikaner Woman Network is, who Afrikaner Woman is, okay? So please go and vote and share with your peoples, share with your networks, just send them the link, all right? So voting ends on the 7th of May, and I'm going to put the link in the show notes, all right? So very, very excited about that. And then for the Afrikaner Woman Festival, we also received an approval today that will allow for our international community to purchase their tickets. Yango. I'm overwhelmed. Let me tell you, I cried when I saw that email. I cried because I wish you knew how much has gone into getting this and for how long. Like, it started even before the idea of Afrikaner Woman. There's just so much that has gone into this. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. And I'm, and then I also get another email that's saying, oh, by the way, Afrikaner Woman has been featured in the new hashtag podcast releases newsletter issue, which is a collaboration of Black Pod News and Black Podcasting Awards. Yeah, please, guys, go check them out. Again, I'll share the link in the show notes. It was such a beautiful surprise to be recognized in this way. So thank you so much to Black Pod News and Black Podcasting Awards. I'm so grateful. I'm just grateful. This week has been a lot of good. And like when I say I have joy, I have so much joy. So, which it kind of brings me to our guest for today. And you're about to meet someone who is just overflowing with joy and bubbles. Like, she is infectious. Her laugh is infectious. And you will have a smile on your face for the entire episode. I am so pleased to welcome Anina Williams to the Afrikaner Woman Mic. Please enjoy this conversation. Anina Williams is a Zambian-born woman raised in the diaspora. Most of her education is international, and she has lived most of her life abroad. She is passionate about Black consciousness, African history, feminism, and women's empowerment. As an entrepreneur, she runs a successful Zambian-owned business. Anina is passionate about community engagement and development. She is a daughter of the land, a wife to a rock star, a mother of the next international champions. She is a bold, confident, strong, beautiful Black woman. Please help me welcome Anina to the Afrikaner Woman Mic. Hi.
Hi, Julie. was just too
That's just too much. What do you mean? That is who you are. So why? How can it be too much? There's nothing like that.
No, you know how to big us up, man. You know how to make us feel good. No, thank you for the introduction. It's an honor to be on here because I really believe in what you do and what you stand for, and even just the brand itself. So thank you for having me on.
Oh, thank you. All right, let's jump in. What is your favorite childhood memory?
Wow. Hey, everyone should know, first of all, that I didn't get these questions before. So I'm literally answering as organically and as authentically as anyone could. Wow. Childhood memory. Wow. There's so many, but I think what stands out for me is a Chinese restaurant that my dad always used to take us to in Coventry. So my dad wasn't staying with us full time when my mom was studying law at Warwick University, but he would come from time to time from Zambia, and he would take us to this Chinese restaurant, which was like in a pagoda kind of building. I just remember like the pagoda kind of building. I would go in there, then we'd always like he'd get us to try different things. Like if it wasn't like this once, we'd try like prawns. The next time it would be like frog legs, just lobster, crabs. My mom all the time would be like just rolling her eyes, being like, "Oh, here it goes again." But yeah, no, that would definitely be one of my most memorable childhood memories was that like my dad was always like the adventurer, the explorer, and my mom would tag along. But my mom was more like the disciplinarian, let's get your morals and values in check. But yeah, they balanced each other out.
That's nice. That's nice. So you've spent most of your time abroad. Where have you been?
Okay, so I was born in Lusaka. We left when I was six, like I said, to go, and my mom was studying law in Coventry. So 6 to 12 in Coventry, so basically my whole entire primary school in Coventry. Then I did the first half of my high school at International School of South Africa in Mafeking, and then I finished off in Chengelo in Mukushi, farming district in Zambia, very well known for farming district. And then after that, I got a full scholarship to attend the UWC College in Victoria, BC. That was for 2 years. And then after that, a partial scholarship to do my BSc in biology at York University in Toronto, followed by a postgraduate certificate in project management at Humber College in Toronto, and then finished off my master's in Michigan in America. In between my education, I'd be back in Zambia working for World Vision, HODI, which is a local NGO. I did some teaching as well in the UK. So those are the places that I've been bouncing around. Sometime in other African countries, but mostly when it comes to Africa, Zambia.
So, what is the thing that you took away most, like from all the different places that you've stayed and just being able to travel? Because I think sometimes, as parents, we're like, oh, we want the children to have stability, so you want to try and keep them in one place. But then, when you've got this, experience of going to different countries, education in different countries as well. I think the approach is also, very different. What is the one thing that stood out most for you?
I think, I don't know if I'm going to answer your question correctly, but the one thing that stood out the most to me is that everyone's different but the same, if that makes sense. So, like, everyone has a different background, everyone has different color skin, everyone has different personalities, but everyone's a human being. So, like, the wants and the needs you know, that we have are more similar than different, like especially when it just comes to basic stuff, like the love you have for your mother, or the love you have for your child, or the fact that you want to be financially comfortable enough to take care of yourself and the people that you love. Just the basic human condition is the same. So I don't know if I've answered your question, but yeah.
Yeah. So tell us about your rock star. I'm such a sucker for a love story. Where did you meet your rock star?
Oh wow, like I met my rock star in Jamaica. So like I grew up, like I said, my childhood was very colorful. So my mom, one of the now I can tell you another childhood memory that I have is my mom dancing around as she would be cleaning the house or cooking to reggae. So UB40, you know, Boney M, all those classics, whatever it was, she loved Caribbean music. That was her thing. So that was my first introduction to Caribbean kind of like culture. And then my two brothers became Rastafarian right in front of my eyes, and I started learning more about Black consciousness, Black revolutionary movements and all that stuff. And just the just Jamaicans just have that swag of like, this is who I am. You know, so I was always like, even from my mom, from my brothers, I got very curious about Jamaica and I always wanted to visit. So during my first trip, I was staying with a close friend of mine, Michelle. Hey, Michelle. I have to shout her out. She's Jamaican. I was staying with her ex-boyfriend. And so I was really bored at home and I was like, okay, this is kind of, you know, dragging. And so her ex-boyfriend's little brother is my husband, the rock star. So I met him. I think that was the third day I was in Jamaica. He took me out. It was lust at first sight. And yeah, that's how I met the dude.
Lust at first sight. I can't. So how was, I guess, how has marriage been? Because I've spoken to different people, you know, and let's say just in the context of, let's say, Zambians, where merging two tribes sometimes is difficult. So then I'm like, okay, now you're merging two countries. What's that like? You know, the different cultures. And you know, obviously marriage has its own complications and all of that on top of that. So I don't know. What has your experience been?
My experience has been a full experience. I'm going to put it like that because my marriage has been very turbulent. It hasn't been an easy marriage. Is there an easy marriage? I don't know. Maybe people just don't tell the truth, don't really tell the truth about their experience in marriage and relationships. But I'll tell it like it is. It's been a turbulent marriage. I'm actually enjoying my marriage now for the first time properly. I've been married for 12 years, and this is when I'm starting to see the fruits of my labor. So we were separated twice, the first time for a year and the second time for 2.5 years. And then we reconciled this past April, so April 2023, and did, you know, intensive marriage counseling and, you know, involving God as well as spirituality. But just also just having come to the realization that we both valued each other enough to really give it a try. And so I think, not I think, both of us had worked on ourselves individually. Like I've been in therapy for over 4 years. He hasn't been in therapy for that long, but still consciously working on himself. So it really took both of us working on ourselves separately and then coming back together and realizing that this is something that we want to fight for. And I can now confidently say that he is my forever life partner, but it didn't come easy. It didn't come easy. Like a lot of times you just see people holding hands on the beach, like swaying their hands back and forth. And you're like, oh, I want to be there. I'm like, okay, but it took a minute. It took a minute. So yeah, no, it's been a journey, but like, would I take away everything that I've been through that now I have such a best friend, like someone I can confide to about everything, someone that I trust? Would I take away the bad the badness that I went through. No, because I think that's also part of growth. And then do we say that we don't want to go through challenges? We just want to have the nice things. But then how do you appreciate the nice things if you've never been through any challenges? So, yeah.
I love that. There's a lot of things you said in there, which I'm like, where do I start from? I think a lot of times, you know, you get into a relationship and, or I've seen people in, you know, like whether it's a marriage or long-term relationships, and the partner doesn't want to do the work. You know what I mean? You're like, I want this to work. I want us to, you know, find a way to stay together, but then you find that it's only one-sided, you know? And I think that's very difficult, because then now you have to make a decision about, am I going to keep fighting by myself? How long can I keep fighting for us by myself? And yeah, so I think it's great that, you know, he also did the work, and, you know, you're both doing the work, and then you could come together and say, yes, we do want to make this work. And then I also think, I mean, this is coming from somebody who's never been married, but I think it's nice to be able to say, let's separate, because I think sometimes when people hear the word separate, they think that's the end, it's over. It's like, it's not divorce, guys, it's separation. Yeah. You get what I'm saying? Like, calm down. You know what I mean? But you just, there's some times where you just need space to make the heart ponder, you know, and just be like, let me remember why we actually came together in the first place, or, you know, just to miss those little things that you don't have anymore because they're not so close, you know?
Yes.
So I think sometimes separation can be a healthy thing. Because then it makes both sides also realize what they have, what you have, you know? Yeah, I think that's great. I think it's great. Now you said you've been in therapy for the last 4 years. Are you okay with sharing what you have discovered about yourself during therapy?
Yeah, I mean, I can you probably go even further than that and give a shout out. So that's my primary therapist. I don't know if she's gonna be down below. But and then I also have my secondary therapist, Benjamin. Yeah, I can share. Like Maria, interestingly enough, when I started therapy with her, I didn't realize that I was depressed. So she told me years later that, like, girl, you were depressed. She only waited like 3 years to tell me that I was depressed. But anyways, I'm sure she didn't want to hurt my feelings. But that's when I started. So I should have been at the peak of my my alcohol abuse, and at the peak of my addiction to nicotine, and at the peak of just a lot of just cognitive distortions and anger, frustration, all just the negative emotions. So that's when I started with her. I had a BP scare, I remember very well, and my BP shot up, and I really got so fearful for my life, and I just wondered, like, was I gonna die? That's literally where I got to. So the doctor that I went to see for the same BP scare recommended that I do therapy, and that's how I went to her. So she started working with me, you know, explaining that I was in a toxic marriage. You know, my work environment was also, you know, questionable. My habits, the way I interpreted life. Just a lot. She really did a lot of heavy digging in terms of just trying to, like, you know, like heavy digging in terms of getting deeper into the core of my brokenness, but also heavy digging in terms of uncovering my eyes because I was completely blinded to my situation. I mean, I knew that I wasn't living healthy in a healthy way, but I didn't know what the problem was. I had no clue what the issue was. So she diagnosed it, so to speak, in a way that I could digest without me getting so scared that I didn't have any hope. So she's very, I have to give a big shout out to her because she saved my life, literally saved my life. Because I feel that if I was in the same condition that I was in then, I don't know if I'd still be alive. So she gets like a really big, big, big shout out. And Benjamin too, because Benjamin was introduced to me as my secondary therapist so that I could work on my addiction to nicotine and also my abuse of alcohol. So yeah, like actually December 2nd, this past December 2nd was 1 year, you know, smoke-free, nicotine-free, like completely sober. So you know, like congratulations to me. And also I've like, yeah, like in terms of alcohol abuse, that's like almost non-existent because I hardly drink maybe once every 3 months. And the funny thing is that like alcohol doesn't even taste the same anymore. Like before it used to be like the heightened experience of my week where I was like, wow, this is like so awesome. And now I drink and I'm like, this kind of tastes yucky. Then the morning you wake up with the hangover, you're like, how inconvenient is this? You know, I have things to do. I don't have time to be hangover, you know, but yeah. And, you know, so yeah, that's a big celebration, but I'm not perfect. Like I, you know, a little cognitive distortion still creeps in there, but most of the times I'm like more aware of them. I still have a lot of insecurities. You know, I'm still trying to big up myself in a certain way, but like, am I better than how I was before? Definitely. Like, am I a healthier version of myself? Definitely. Like, am I causing less harm to others and myself? Definitely. So I have like a testimony to share. I have a story to tell. And I think that's why it was really just perfect timing to be asked to be on this podcast, because I think that when you've been to the bottom of the bottom and you recover from that, you just want to encourage other people that there's hope, you know, for something more than you might think that that's all you have is your present circumstance. But if you can just hold out, there's so much more, you know.
So I'm going to add an additional shout out to the doctor who told you, who recommended that you go for therapy, because I think a lot of times you have, you know, medical practitioners who are just like trying to treat whatever you've come with. But for your doctor to say, hey, I think let's dig a little deeper. I think that's amazing. So tell us, I guess, tell us your story. What was rock bottom, or what got you there?
Yeah, girl, you're digging. Woo! Okay, what got me to rock bottom? Geez, just life, eh? Just life. Rock bottom was, that should have been, I'm 41 now, so I'm trying to go back. That should have been about 35. 35, yes, that should have been rock bottom. Because, 35. So what got me there? Just living, like, you know, I had a lot of like trauma, childhood trauma, like growing up, like out of respect for my parents, I probably won't go as deep as I do in the therapy room. But like, we all have issues, you know, that revolves around just our parents being human beings and even them being incomplete, you know, and trying to figure out life itself. They just make mistakes and not realizing, or maybe sometimes realizing that the ripple effects will be bad, but they just figure that like, okay, well, I mean, I basically, you know, I was given the choice to either sink or swim, and I swam. So I'm sure my kids are going to make it. And also, I feel like for my parents' generation, they're always reminding me like how fortunate, like, you know, we are. Like, oh, I had it hard. Like, I just basically was just thrown into the pit and be like, just survive. Like, and I know that's not anything in relation to how we are growing up, but I just want to give kudos to them because also they also didn't have it easy either. So I'm sympathetic and compassionate about the mistakes that they made. So basically, my trauma, childhood trauma, just revolved around just the traditional, like polygamy. I know my father doesn't like me saying that he was a polygamist or is a polygamist, no, plural, whatever. I don't know what you want to put it. But the truth of the matter is that he had multiple children with multiple women, you know. And so for me personally, when I look at it as in traditionally or African history or Zambian history, I define it as polygamy. So growing up like in a house where there was like a mother and a father, and being told that, for example, like, oh, I'm the only girl, I have three older brothers, and then now being exposed to the fact that, oh, actually not the only girl. And not only are you not the only girl, but like you have, I don't know how many other brothers and sisters. That was a really big shock. And I don't know if I've always been kind of the responsible child, but also now to be carried the burden of communicating between my parents when they would be having, you know, how do I put it, conflict and being made to be the mediator, being made to be the interpreter, you know. Like I started counseling my parents when I was 15, and just witnessing the severe emotional and physical altercations that would happen between them, that was very traumatic. So all in all, on the outside, yes, like I was intelligent, I was getting the scholarships, I was going abroad to study, but I had some brokenness inside of me. You know, that then now when I was 18, and I didn't go out there saying I wanted to smoke. I was just outside of my lecture hall with you know, a friend from class, and they were smoking, and they're like, oh, do you want to have? I was like, oh no, I don't smoke. You know, fast forward six, seven times of being offered a cigarette and rejecting, you're like, oh, what the heck? Let me just give it a try. I was hooked. Like it very short space of time, you know, I was hooked to cigarettes, and then university, binge drinking, then starting to now kind of make it like more of a habit, you know, every week, every Friday, you know, getting now to working. You start now self-medicating. It's almost as if you're not, you don't have the capacity to kind of think through. And I must admit, I was one of those people who didn't have very good life skills. I didn't have any coping skills at all. Like I never was taught, you know, mindfulness or like cognitive distortions or whatever. Everything I've learned from therapy 35 to date is all new news to me. I never knew it, you know. So basically just trying to cope with life with, you know, anger, frustration, alcohols, sex, cigarettes. And it just took a toll because, like, I didn't know how to handle conflict. I didn't know how to handle difficult situations. You know, I wasn't even involving God at that stage. So, completely lost in the wilderness. That's what put me to rock bottom, combined with the toxic relationship marriage that I was in at the time. So, that was a combination of everything all together, making me have that BP scare where I was like in bed for, I believe, maybe like 3 to 4 days. It was quite a scary situation. But yeah, no, what brought me to rock bottom was not managing life effectively and using the wrong coping mechanisms.
You know, when you talk about conflict resolution, I think for the most part, I would dare say like 90% of the population don't do well with conflict resolution, especially I think especially it's a culture thing where, okay, there's a conflict, but then everybody should just pretend it didn't happen, you know? Or, you know, if you witness some sort of conflict, you're just supposed to pretend it didn't happen. And then if you find yourself in a conflict, you're just supposed to move on. Like, you know, just brush it on, move on. No, that's your relative, so whoever, just move on, you know. Or you don't even know how to face it. But I don't know, what have you learned about conflict resolution? Because I feel like a lot of people need help on this particular one.
Yeah, conflict resolution, I feel like you just have to tackle it head on. But you also have to kind of be perceptive. You know, you need to, I feel like a lot of times we don't give ourselves the chance to really think through things. So these days, when I, and again, like conflict is maybe also your perception, because you might be thinking that there's a conflict while the other person has gone around, has gone to the spa and doing their hair. So conflict is also like a perceptual thing. Like you feel that there's conflict, other person might just be feeling like, you know, that they just like communicated effectively at that, you know. So yeah, it's a perceptual thing, and I take the time to step back and just try to assess and like, okay, so conflict. So again, you said conflict resolution. Like if I'm thinking that something is conflict, most of the time, that means my boundaries have been violated in some way. Because why would I be perceiving it as like conflict? So then I try to dig deep. I'm like, okay, what type of boundary then is it that has been violated? Is it time? Is it financial, physical, whatever? Like, why am I bothered by this situation? And then I now take another self-reflection step of like, okay, so am I willing to continue to kind of dance around this issue in a delicate way, or do I want to confront it? Sometimes it's not even really that necessary to confront it, especially if you feel like you've already confronted it a couple of times. Because there's sometimes when I feel like we're dealing with conflict with the same people, or the same situations, and if you've already tried to confront it and it hasn't been, the situation hasn't been resolved, then sometimes the best thing is just to like ignore it. I mean, if you can't get away from it, try to distance yourself as much as possible. Just ignore that situation. Now, if I want to confront or like deal with that, like you said, conflict resolution, then it would mean that either there's no escape, like there's no way I can avoid it, or I value that person or that situation enough for me to put myself in that vulnerable position of like trying to resolve it. Because conflict resolution is quite emotionally draining. So an example would be like, okay, if I'm in conflict with my mother or my father, there's no way around it. That's a lifelong relationship and I have to resolve it. So I'm gonna probably take, you know, a couple of bullets for the team in order to actually get to that point where we can discuss and hash things out. Because there has to be a level of humility, I feel, that even to approach conflict resolution, you have to come from a humble space to be like, okay, I'm going to acknowledge where I went wrong or didn't do well, in as well as pointing out the things that I didn't appreciate about what you did as well. But it always has to be a two-way street. I never approach anything anymore of like from a hierarchy of saying that, okay, I'm superior to this situation and you are lesser than. I really want to take responsibility for my part in any type of conflict. There's some situations where I feel that it's even kinder to just not confront at all, you know, because there's some situations that are so volatile that I feel like I just take myself away from that space. And I don't know, other people say, oh, but why? That's a coward's approach. I feel like you have to like choose your battles. You can't go into everything being like, I'm going to do conflict resolution in my life from point A to point Z. I'm like, girl, do you have enough time for that? Or do you even have enough of emotional capacity to do that? You know? So yeah, conflict resolution is, I feel like it's different from place to place. Like for me, it just really depends. But the first thing is mindfulness. I really used to be like knee-jerk reactions, and I used to be very easily triggered, very easily. I do believe I had a huge ego. So just coming from that point of like being more self-reflective already, like I deserve an award for that. Yeah.
Listen, when you say choose your battles, oh my gosh. There's sometimes, you know, when you're talking to a friend and I'm like, is that really worth it? I'm like, Let it go, let it go. Yeah, I'm very big on choosing my battles. I'll look at this situation, I'm like, is this one worth it? Yeah, no. I don't have the energy. I don't have the energy. Now, you mentioned earlier. Now I don't know if you use it in a sentence, so I'm not sure whether it's an addiction or a coping mechanism. And you mentioned sex. Now, this isn't something that people would, especially African women, would necessarily be talking about. Like, what is your relationship with sex, right? And how do you use it? So just expand a little on that and how it played into, you know, your addictions with, let's say, nicotine and alcohol.
Yeah, they were a sweet triple threat. You want to put it like that? They came as a three. And I never really knew that consciously until very recently, actually, when, I was being celibate, and yeah, I just like, I was like, wait a minute. Because I was like, because like the three musketeers, like I said, they used to move, all together. Then I was like, okay. So the smoking one came out. It was a struggle because everyone who knows me well, I knows or knew that I loved cigarettes more than life itself. Like you couldn't separate me from the damn things. Like it was wake up in the morning, have a cigarette, after a meal, have a, basically, it was life. Like I would not be able to go a day without having a cigarette. And if you force me to go a day without having a cigarette, there'll be consequences to pay because I would be a mean bitch. Like literally, you would have it. So that was the first musketeer to leave. And so then I was like, okay, well, anyway, we were not really drinking that much or having a lot of sex. But then I was like, anyway, we can still balance this thing out. And then I guess I wasn't drinking a lot because, again, smoking and alcohol went as a pair. So I was trying to quit smoking. So then I had to reduce my alcohol, and then I started back drinking. But then drinking didn't feel the same anymore. But then I was like, okay, let me have more sex. Let me have more sex. And so I was like, hold on a second. Like, okay, so are we having more sex because we're just enjoying the sex? Or we're trying to de-stress as using the sex. So that's when I started to figure out that, oh, I see. So this is also a coping mechanism that went in these three. Because like if you have someone who has been, an addict, like addicts are always chasing that big, extravagant high. So however that is, if it's like nicotine or alcohol or sex or combo three. Woo, now that one is good. Oh, I'm like, I'm drunk, plus I'm having a cigarette, plus I have the like an orgasm from Nirvana or out of this world. Like you can't get any better than that. So yeah, no, it was a thing. Yeah. I've always been sexual, like I think even just from the Zambian culture, or at least like being Kaonde or whatever that means to whoever is listening, but like I don't think that like I don't know how to put it. I'm not sure if I should say that women are sexualized, but like as a Kaonde woman, I'm definitely expected to be good in bed. I wouldn't say that I'm expected to be like lousy, So like even from like traditional teachings or whatever, like you better perform, girl. You better not be like, you know, shaming us because we done taught you. So coming from that, and also just from myself, I do want to acknowledge that I do feel like I'm definitely quite a sexual, sensual person. So now with my sobriety, and that's why I said that I'm celibate, because I wanted to understand what life meant without the three musketeers completely. So no alcohol, no cigarettes, no sex. Like, what type of life? What is that? What does that look like? And I'm happy to report that it looks pretty good. I mean, it looks pretty good. Like, I feel like when you're in it, and this is like the, addicts type of, I don't know, playbook, is that like when you're in it, it just feels like it's impossible to be anything else. But when you're actually courageous enough to step out of it, then you see like how much you were missing. Like, I have two daughters, and like, having to step out after like every little engagement, or after like a school project to have a cigarette, or like after we've just landed like from a trip and I'm rushing to have a cigarette, like, how inconvenient. Like, my addiction to nicotine was taking away like my everyday simple joys, And then, the alcohol and the sex as well, not so much like disruptive for my everyday life, but now I'm like seeking like those type of joys that are authentic to me as a person, like painting, dance, sharing, having conversations like this. Like, the essence of who I am is an artist. So anything that has to do with creativity, philosophy, really, make my soul sing. So those are the things now that I'm becoming passionate about. And, even just having like a very personal relationship with God has been very, very fulfilling for me. So yeah, now I feel like I'm rambling.
Well, funny enough, I was going to ask you about your relationship with God, and how did that come in? Like, how was it introduced into your life? And then what have you taken it to mean?
Yeah, no, my relationship with God is a very personal relationship, and I'm very protective over it, because sometimes people, not a lot of people, I guess, would some people would want to question me on what does it mean. I mean, I want to associate with being Christian. I believe in Jesus, but then there's certain aspects of my spirituality that now I'm trying to make more dynamic, and so I'm at a sort of a certain kind of crossroads, because if I'm identifying with being Christian, but then I might be practicing things which are not like conventionally Christian, am I still Christian? That's the question which I'm asking myself now, because I alluded to this, I think, during our preliminary, discussions. Yeah, I also have such a love for Africa, for Blackness, for Black consciousness, and I want to, respect and honor our ancestors as well. And I do believe that there's something very special about our history, specifically when it comes to polygamy, when it comes to a lot of different things, even just our own authentic, type of praise and worship. You get into the whole thing of like, colonialism, slavery, Christianity being used to, I don't know, like trap the mind, or just trap a human being into just doing crazy stuff, and that doesn't feel good to me. And also when it comes to like sexuality, like I said, I might be celibate now, but I'm a very sexual and sensual person. And I talked to you about it. I said, like, is no sexuality and God, is it mutually exclusive? Are they able to coexist together happily or do I have to choose one or the other? So when I'm now starting to get to kind of like a mature understanding of who I am, and now having my spirituality, my Christianity, now how I want to find a way for all of those things to still be in my life, to be meaningful, but I also have to be authentic to myself. So that is still something which is, I'm still kind of, I'm asking questions, and with people that I feel safe with, I'm having those discussions and trying to see, because you only get one life, you know, and if you're trying to live your life to make others happy, then that isn't your life. So that's all I'm trying to do. And so labels are getting a little bit tricky for me. So it's more like a friend of mine, Denise. Hey, Denise! When I keep on giving shout outs, she's always talking about being boxless. And that really sounds good to me, because I think society has put us in boxes just so that it's easier to understand this person who you're dealing with. But is it really true that like this complicated individual could fit in a series of boxes? I don't know. So I have more questions than answers when it comes to that.
Well, fair enough. As a Kawande woman, how have you navigated tradition, especially in your marriage? What have you found? 12 years is a long time.
You're telling me. No, it's long. Yeah, as a Kawande woman, and again, Kawande, being a Kawande woman is just part of who I am. Like I come back to what my dad told me when I was 16, when I was just about to go to the UWC World College. Actually, he's the one who took me there. And he said, you know, Butenta, as you're coming over here, you know, take what's good about being, you know, in the West and leave what's bad. And also in Zambia, you know, take what's good about being Zambian and leave what's bad. So yeah, Kawande woman would be probably mixed with a lot of other cultures that, you know, I've been exposed to or lived amongst. I'm proud of being Kawande. I'm really proud of my blackness. When I first got married, I was doing everything to please people. Like I was doing everything, like the kitchen party teachings to the T. You know, I'd be tired, I'd be working all day. My husband would work all day, but I would get back into the kitchen, you know, 7 months pregnant, cooking supper. Like I was doing the most. Like it wasn't feasible. It wasn't anything that could be able to be sustainable, you know, but I was trying to make sure that my mommy was happy, you know, that society was happy, that my husband was happy, you know, treat him like a king. You know, you're going to be slaving the whole day at work, come into the kitchen, slave away into the kitchen, make sure he's okay. Make sure you massage his feet for him. When you get into the bedroom, make sure that he's pleased sexually, and also run him a bath in the morning and put his clothes on the bed. I'm like, and I'm 7 months pregnant with a toddler. As the Kawande woman, when I first got married, I was doing the most and it wasn't sustainable. And maybe that's even where some of my anger issues and frustration came from, because I felt that I was the person who was solely responsible for the success of my marriage and my relationship. And he was just supposed to sit back while I do all the work and just receive. And I wasn't getting anything. Like who was filling my cup? You know, I was really exhausted. So the Kawande woman marriage wasn't sustainable. I had to mix that up with a few other things to make it more healthy. So now our relationship is more about being partners. Number one is friendship. Like just the normal kind of platonic friendship, like nothing like, wow, oh my God, like, well, this is like an extra special friendship. No, like my best girlfriend, that type of friendship is now with my husband. And I tell you, like, it's really nice just to be on the phone with him for like 2 hours, 2.5 hours, friendship first. And then now, okay, if you have that platonic friendship, then everything else builds upon that, because just the same way you understand your friends and you care about their feelings and you want the best for them and you advise them so they can be their best selves. If you have that in your romantic partner, then everything else builds from there. So I'm coming from a broken marriage, so we're building it. We're building it. We're getting now to like the stage where we have a strong foundation. I'll tell you the description of it when I get to maybe like roof level, but we're still building it now.
Ah, I like that. I really like that. So, what is the one thing you want to leave with the audience today? Like, if nothing else, if they heard nothing else today, what is that one thing?
Yeah, the one thing would be to be true to yourself. No matter how much of an outlier you think that you are, no matter if you feel like you stand out and like there's no one else like you, like no matter, like it just dance to the beat of your own fucking drum. That's what I can say. And it's okay not to fit in the boxes perfectly. Like, for heaven's sake, color outside of the boxes. Like, make your own Picasso. Like, why do you want to, be ordinary? Like, if you feel that you don't fit into the box, don't fit into it. I honestly believe that the moment when I accepted myself fully is the now when I started meeting people who are more like me, or who even accepted me for me. Like, that's when it just went, like, when I was so critical of myself, when I didn't accept myself, when I didn't love myself, when I was always like trying to hide and like try to cover myself up, that's when I was getting the most criticism about who I was. But the moment I said, like, I'm a bad bitch, and this is who I am, and I have a place in the world, is the moment that like I just doors started opening and people started accepting me. And even when they'll criticize me before for the same things, they wouldn't criticize me anymore. So I guess I was walking with a different type of swag or different type of self-acceptance that someone couldn't even question me anymore. So I've always felt that like an outlier in Zambia, but the truth is I'm not an outlier. I'm still in the process of finding my tribe, and I'm thankful that I've met so many women in the arts, and not even just in Lusaka, even in here, like Solwezi. Like, there's so many people I've known here for 10 years. When I just got to Solwezi, up to now, we're the best of friends. So it's not really about like having your quirky, like, whatever friends who you'd maybe say, like, okay, that have lived outside of Zambia necessarily. It's just about finding people that can be open to the fullness of who you are, whether they're born and bred in Zambia or not. You can create your own tribe. There's a space for you, basically. And I think that's why, like, I feel like a lot of people are trying to fit in, and it brings a lot of an unhappiness, quiet unhappiness, because they feel like, oh, there's no place for me. So there's basically what I want people to know is that there's always a place for you. And you just have to kind of be patient enough to find out that your tribe, your people, and and being African also is a very broad term. Like, don't feel like, oh, I'm not African enough, or I'm not black enough, or I'm not this enough. But like, oh, to be African, I have to be like this, or to be black, I have to be like this. There's such a big range or diversity of what it means to be African and to be Black. And there's a space for you in that, just the way you are.
Yeah.
Yep. You can say that again. So in the Africana women community, we have a saying, which is know your roots, grow your purpose. So I've got four questions for you. Just tell me whatever comes to mind. So the first question is, what are you rooted to?
My culture. Do I have to expound?
If you want to.
No, I'll end there. My culture.
Okay. So what are your favorite ways to nourish your mind, your body, and your soul?
Nourish my mind. It would definitely be Bible study, early morning, when it's quiet. I start by journaling sometimes, and then I'd read about two or three chapters in the Bible, then I'd meditate over them, and then I'd pray. So that's the best way that I nourish my mind. My body, definitely exercise. Like, I really love the positive vibrations that exercise gives me. It just makes me feel unstoppable. It just makes me feel like whatever challenge I have in front of me, I can conquer. And whatever issue that I had behind me is truly behind me. So exercise is great. Don't ask me about, like, you know, diet, because, you know, I haven't conquered in that department. So diet aside, we're going to focus on exercise, mind, body, and soul. Soul would definitely be my passion. So, like, painting a picture, going for a dance class, traveling, learning how to cook something new, going for a music festival. Yeah, like those type of things for sure. Or with the nourishment of the body, I guess also like self-care, like doing nails, going for a massage, things like that.
Okay. So do you have a weakness that has now become a superpower?
Wow, you got some good questions. A weakness that has now become a superpower. I don't know. Like, I have to think about that more. So I'll probably come back with an answer another time. But maybe what I would say, the closest one would be my cognitive distortions. I would ruminate like for Africa. I was like a real, real like overthinker. So my cognitive distortions were all over the map. So I haven't conquered them 100% for them to become a superpower. Definitely much more, you know, much more in tune with my thought processes. So I'm much more conscious. But yeah, I'm gonna get back to you on my superpower.
Cool. I'm going to hold you to that. So what do you know as a certainty?
As a certainty is that your life is supposed to be enjoyed to the fullest. As long as you are causing the least amount of harm to yourself and others, you should be able to enjoy your life.
So interesting you say that. Right now we're doing this thing called Good Morning Beautiful, which we usually do at the end of the year, and it's sort of like a reflection about your year. It's a 7-day wellness challenge, and today the challenge was asking, you know, what is it in your life, what makes you feel alive? Like, are you just, you know, coasting, just doing things on repeat? But then what actually makes you feel alive? So I love that. Immediately thought of that. Listen, Anina, it has been awesome. Please tell the audience where they can find you. And then also a little bird told me that a podcast is going to be coming soon. So I'm pretty sure by the time people are listening to this, there's also going to be a podcast. But yeah, how do people find you and how do they support
you? Okay, yeah. So well, right now I haven't, like, I'm in the process of creating like my social media like platforms, but like, yeah, basically just my email address aninawilliams@kasayas.com, which is down here. I always see them doing that. But yeah, I will be creating an Instagram account, and I will be working with Africana Woman on producing my podcast. So yeah. Yeah, so yeah, stay tuned. Like, this is the beginning of, this is the genesis of some truth telling from Nina's side, and just discovering life and exploring life more. So I want to tell my story. I want to help people heal, and
This has been great. Thank you so much for sharing your story. And I know that people are definitely going to take things away from this. So thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Chulu.
This week, I've been trying to get the women in podcasting to realize that there is no box in regards to their podcast and creativity. As Anina calls it, live boxless. Your imagination is as expansive as you allow it to be. Now, aside from, you know, your moral compass, which can be, let's say, the Ten Commandments, right? There really are no rules to the type of life you can create or attract, right? And I remember when we had our baking business back in the day, you know, back then, our slogan was, if you imagine it, we can create it. Because if the thought has been put in your mind or your heart, then it is as good as real, so long as you take the actions to materialize it. I hope I'm not sounding too abstract, but essentially I'm saying, do not wait for permission to live your life in the way you feel called to. It is time to give our guest her roses. Please find Anina's post on our socials and say thank you. Take a screenshot, share it on your stories, tag us at Africana Woman, and let us know what you learned from her. The best way to support the Africana Woman podcast is to share the podcast with your network, the people you know. Share it with your sisters, your mothers, your aunties, a friend, and even a brother. Yeah, share it, whether you're sending a link, whether you're putting it on your stories, or just telling people that, hey, this is a podcast that I listen to and I think it is amazing and you'll get a lot of value from it. So we really appreciate your support. Now, reminder, please go vote for Africana Woman for the Kayana Female MSME Award. The link is in the show notes. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to the Africana Woman podcast. I don't take it lightly that you are here and that you are part of our growing community. The Africana Woman podcast is part of the Africana Woman Network. My name is Chulu, your host. Until next time.